Okay, good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. Before I get started here, can I get a quick signal check?
59, Cannon RCT.
Okie dokie. Change the angle of the antenna there a little bit. See if that's any better or worse there, Richard.
Like I said, you sound 59.
Sorry, I got a little confused there because the other side of the radio started talking at me there. So, okay. Kind of a robotic voice. It was the Fusion repeater. Anyway, this is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. Welcome to, again, the Emergency Preparedness Net. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness with particular emphasis on fires, and we'll talk a little bit about COVID-19. Not a lot has happened. Also have an upcoming earthquake drill. We'll talk about that. So, anyway, it's kind of an open forum thing, but we still haven't talked enough about fires and what to do about them, how to move back in, that kind of thing. So that's what I kind of want to make sure I covered those topics tonight. Of course, all amateur operators are welcome to participate in the discussions during this net. And, of course, I'd like you to participate. It's not a lecture. It's a kind of a sharing of ideas. So, anyway, when you check in, use your call sign slowly and phonetically. And give me your name and your location to be recognized by that control. Let's see first if there's anyone on EchoLink that would like to check in. Come now. All right, no EchoLink people. So let's take general check-ins for the Emergency Preparedness Net. Come now, please.
Salem.
Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima Oscar, Jeff in Albany.
Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art in Canby.
Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard in Salem.
Okay, let's pause there for just a second because we had a double. Okay, so let me go through who we got first, and then we'll end up with Richard there where the double was. Anyway, they got Paul in there, Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima Uniform. Welcome. Jeff was in there, Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima Oscar. Art was in there, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango. Let's see, and before we started, we had Richard, Kilo 9, Romeo Charlie Papa. And then the last check-in was the other Richard, Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta. And there was double. So who'd we miss?
The double was November 0, November, November Oscar, Fred Lafayette.
Okay, well, there's Fred. Welcome. You got through this time, November 0, November, November Oscar. No. I need one of those slash zeros for your call sign in particular. Before that, we also had Richard Whiskey 0 Echo Delta Foxtrot. So that's three Richards and no Dicks. That's great. So there we go. Anybody else?
Kilo India 7, Kilo Papa Foxtrot, also not a Richard. Just wanted to make sure I could still get in even though I wasn't a Richard.
Yeah, this is Kilo 9, Romeo Charlie Papa. I'm going to change my name to Dick for this this meeting.
Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Allen in South Salem.
Is that Big Dick or Little Dick?
You're smaller than me, I'll become Big Dick.
Everybody's smaller than you.
That was Alan there, Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel. Alan's going to teach us how to do windlink tonight, right, Alan? And then we have Tim, Kilo India 7, Kilo Papa Foxtrot. And, of course, Canaan RCB, I acknowledged you earlier in the check-ins. And there already is a Dick in Dundee. Did you know that? So you can't be Dick in Dundee.
Well, I have a girlfriend named Jane, so it's not Dick and Jane. Canaan RCB.
Okay, well, we are still taking check-ins here. This is the Emergency Preparedness Net.
Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray, Blaine, Salem.
Hello, Brett. Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform.
Hello, WB6SRP, Ben, Oregon City.
Okay, there was Ben, Whiskey Bravo 6, Sierra Romeo Papa. And Dan, Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform. And Blaine, Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray. Welcome to you. Let's see, that's 13 of us. Let's see if we can get a few more, and then we'll do some announcements.
Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor, Walton Woodburn.
Kilo Juliet 7, India Bravo Hotel, Jordan, Lebanon.
Okay, there was Gerard, the fastest call sign I've heard there from you. That's Kilo Juliet 7, India Bravo Hotel. And Walt, Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor. Now that's, we have 15 of us here. That's probably a good stopping point for right now. We can go on and do some announcements. Now, let's see, one announcement I had, which is sort of a general purpose announcement, I just read on my Nextdoor application. Nextdoor is a something that Dan introduced me to. It's kind of a information sharing social network thing that's based on neighborhoods. So anyway, there is a just got a notification from the Marion County Sheriff's Office that Oregon Highway 22 is now open to through traffic beginning at 7 p.m. tonight, which is right now. And it says they'll be, you know, they had been closed. Says that it is open now. They've cleared the trees and that it would have a speed limit of around 40 in some locations, so beware of that. Anyway, that's good news. Highway 22 is now open there. So, anyway, ODOT did that. Let's see. Anyway, you can read the Marion County Sheriff's Office or from ODOT. They are still working in the work zones. They're asking people to be careful of hazardous damaged guardrails. You know, there's roadside log decks, slash piles. And then they're also concerned about slide and debris flow during the rains, which is like today. So, at any rate, and it says, of course, let me get one trip here. Okay, anyway, it also says probably no gas stations along the way, so make sure you fill your gas tank, pack enough water, food, and supplies for the journey. And, again, use extreme caution when traveling through the burn area allowing extra time, but it is now open, so that's the good news there. And let's see, are there any other announcements of general nature for the net? Come now.
KR7KPF.
Yes, Tim, go ahead.
I never want to pass up on the opportunity to mention that the times of Usenet have changed from 4:30 to 5. Now we're running 5:30 to 6 p.m. still on Tuesdays. Still our target audience is the ham operators who are 18 years and younger. All hams are welcome. And since they're both on the line, I wanted to take a moment to thank Eat Dessert First and IBH for being there and supporting the net, supporting the young ladies who are being our net controls. Last week was mighty lonely, and it was nice to have you both both on the air this afternoon. That's all for I have. KS7KPF, back to net.
Okay, thank you, Tim. And the other announcements? Dan, did you want to give us anything about the general announcements?
Well, thanks, Brett. Sure like to see a good showing tomorrow for SlowScanNet at 8 o'clock. We get together at 8 and we try to start sending pictures by 8:30. Over a period of time, we're probably going to slip a little bit earlier. Seem to enjoy it a lot. There's not a whole lot going on Wednesday nights a little bit earlier than that, so we'll probably slip a little bit earlier as time goes by. But that's been the time for over a year, so we'll stick by it. And also on Thursday nights, be sure and drop in for the MeshNet and in the evening at 7. Brett will also be involved in that pretty heavily. And let's see, we have quite a few activities going on throughout the week. It's a total of like 25 nets in a given week. On Saturdays, we have the SwapNet at 7 p.m. And, of course, every night of the week at InsomniacNet at 11 o'clock. That's kind of a crazy net, but it's meant to be a trivia net. And amazingly enough, you do actually learn something by investigating these topics over a period of a year. I think you'll be amazed at how many little bits of trivia enter into your life. It's just amazing. Of course, everybody knows about our 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock nets during the weekdays. But back to you, Brett. Also, I'd like to know how far 22 goes. Does that mean it cuts all the way through to Ben, WA7ABU?
How about Friday?
Sorry, could you repeat the last thing there and give your call?
Anything on Friday, Dan?
So far, we have no net controller for a Friday night. During the day, of course, we have our 10 and 12 o'clock nets.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so again, they, the press release from ODOT says that San Diego, Oregon 22 will be open to through traffic. So through traffic means through traffic as far as I know. It doesn't. It says that they've removed, again, 30,000 trees from a 40-mile stretch of Oregon 22 that is heavily impacted by winds and wildfires. So, anyway, it says the speed limit is reduced 40 miles an hour between Gates, milepost 33, and Familia Creek Road, milepost 63. So it is at least open through there. So, yes, I assume it is all the way open. I would, you know, do the Oregon trip check, but it started at 7 p.m. tonight. So you can see if there's any traffic on the trip check. But there you go. were there any other announcements or any questions as far as the announcements that we have right now?
KI7FW8.
Yeah, so let's start with Alan there. Go ahead, and then Richard.
I just read a thing that Salem Kaiser is going to keep distance learning through February 1st. So I think they were at November or something, so they're now into the 1st of February. So you were going to talk about COVID, and that kind of goes along with it. KI7FWH, back to net.
Okay, thank you. Richard, EDF, go ahead. Any other announcements? I wanted to talk about the shakeout, so if that's what you want, go ahead and do it. Okay, very good. Well, that's lots of stuff going on this week here. Okay, so I wanted to mention again the Shakeout, the Great Oregon Shakeout, shakeout.org, Sierra Hotel Alpha Kilo Echo Oscar Uniform Tango.org. You can, this is at 10:15 in the morning, local time, on 10:15, which is Thursday. 10:15 on 10:15. Is the big earthquake drill. Now, they claim that people who have registered, there's over 270,000 people who have registered to participate. You don't have to register. You can if you wish. Go to the website. Depends on how much you want to get involved with it. But the important thing, I guess, to realize is, the drill is basically at that time, and I'm hoping that, Gary remembers this. If not, I'll try to get on there, somebody maybe can get on there and remind him at 10:15 is no matter what you're doing, 10:15, you're supposed to drop where you are onto your hands and knees, then crawl under some cover. It says, go sturdy table or desk would be ideal. If there's no shelter nearby, crawl next to an interior wall away from the windows. Stay on your knees, cover your head, bend over to protect your vital organs. Hold on until the shaking stops once you're, under that table. Again, if you can't hold on to a table or something, you hold on to your head and neck with both arms and hands. And try to do that for about a minute, it's just one of those things that gets us into a mode of doing the right thing in an earthquake and, developing kind of a muscle memory. So when we do these drills, we get a muscle memory. So and we try to teach the people in your family the drill as well so that, don't run outside. That's like the worst thing you can do is run outside. You don't want to run to your kids' rooms, You want to ride out the shake where you are, doing the drop, cover, and hold thing. There's all kinds of recommendations if you'd like to read their special report tips on what to do in special situations, like in a car or, various other places. The biggest danger, let me get a drip here. The biggest danger to you on an earthquake is from falling objects, okay? Building collapse, they say, is less of a danger. It says few buildings actually fail completely, especially in single family, wood frame houses. They will bend before they will collapse. But there are some kinds of buildings, especially like unreinforced masonry buildings, like brick buildings, constructed before, our better building codes, where, if you ever see a house that's got brick all over the outside of it, that's not the place to be with all the bricks falling. Yeah, so running outside, not a good thing at all. So, at any rate, interior wall under a desk, that would be best. And then look around your environment and make sure that there are things that aren't going to fall on you. You know, if you have big bookcases along your walls in your ham shack and that's where you are, are those bookshelves, bolted to the wall? Do you have into the stud some kind of screw and some sort of, heavy-duty zip ties or something to keep that shelving unit from falling over on you? So these are the things you think about during these earthquake drills. Are there any questions on that or any comments? Have you ever done one of these drills? I wanted to start with that little topic tonight.
Ken Enter Sydney.
Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, I remember having to do it in schools. We did that in third grade quite a bit. Or at least that's the one I remember. We did it in third grade. So what's next after that? Are we doing Don't Look at the Bright Flash in the Sky?
Sorry, Richard, could you repeat that? There was a little noise here and I couldn't hear. He said, what's after that? Can you say that again, please?
Yeah, I was saying, so after the stop drop and, protect yourself from earthquake, are they going to do, get underneath your desk and don't look outside for nuclear? K9 RCP.
Yeah, it's really the initial shaking that is what you have to protect yourself from. Now, there may be aftershocks and things like that, but you can you want to stay where you are until the shaking stops. Now, you could potentially go outside, but after that, but again, it kind of depends. It's part of assessing where you are. If big buildings that have glass, giant glass windows, those might take a few minutes to fall to the ground if you were like a very tall building, in Portland or something like that, one of those big glass buildings, those sheets of glass could fly down like giant, knives. And, it's a good idea to wait for everything to settle before you get out of it. Anyway, this is just the drill to get you to do the right thing. Don't run outside, don't run down the hallway. You basically don't want to go very far from where you are. If you're in bed, you stay in bed. 10:15, you're probably not in bed. But anyway, there's lots of handouts here on this earthquakecountry.org is one of the links on here from Great Shakeout. You can look at some of the links on here. So anyway, shakeout.org is the website, www.SierraHotelAlphaKilo Echo Oscar Uniform Tango.OscarRomeoGolf. Go there, and then there's resources about the drill and advice on different situations there. Okay, any other comments or questions on that one? Richard, go ahead. Answer there for him. Yeah, Paul, we hear you there. Speak up just a little bit. Your audio is a little quiet, but you're in there. Go ahead.
KE7OLU. Doorways used to have the construction had a very strong header beam across the doorways. In modern construction, wood frame, and also particularly the new metal frame commercial buildings, they do not have that strong header over the doorway. so the doorway is not particularly strong anymore. The other thing is that the most danger is not from building collapse, is from the things that are on the walls or over the ceiling falling on you. So get under something. It doesn't have to be very big, just a table, and that will protect you from 20, 30 pounds object falling from 5 or 6 feet, and hang on to it, because it's the ground will be like a like waves on an ocean. You'll have 2 or 3 foot by 10, 20 foot waves, like on the glassy ocean, that will, when you're on the top of the wave, you'll tend to slide down the other side, and then up and down and up and down. So objects in the building can move back and forth for several feet. Things like refrigerators will move back and forth across the room. So you need to be protected from being crushed by things sliding back and forth and things falling off the ceiling. KE7OLU.
K6, you're at Tango X-ray.
Okay, we have K6 SDX there. There might have been a double also. Let's see who else was there.
JLO.
Okay, we got you there, Jeff. Okay, so let's hear Dan first, and then Jeff. Go ahead.
Well, the last quake I was in was a Sylmar quake, and I was in that town. It was 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was just getting up out of bed. And I was in that town because I was going to a company school for the phone company. And, yeah, I was still in bed, and I could not feel the earthquake. But I looked up the ceiling, and the chandelier that was in the room I was in started rocking. And that's when I realized that it was an earthquake. And again, like what you said, I was on the second floor of this building, and things started rocking. But frankly, I at first could not feel it because of just lying in bed. And when I just realized when things started moving on their own, that certainly was a quake. So, but nothing real serious happened, at least where I was at. So, but anyhow, it is kind of a strange experience.
KE7OLU.
Okay, I hear you there, Paul. Let's pause you for a second. Jeff's first, and then you, and then Paul. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, well, speaking from personal experience, my last major earthquake was a few years ago when I was on an extended business trip in Tokyo, Japan. I was staying on the 40th floor of a hotel at the time when a 7.0 earthquake struck downtown Tokyo, and I was fairly close to the epicenter for that. And what I noticed, first of all, was just shaking, almost like a bed with a vibrator in it, an initial shaking. But then maybe 15 seconds or longer in it, I don't remember exactly how long, the building began swaying, and I understand subsequently that a high-rise can sway as much as a 20-foot lateral displacement. And that is why in places like Japan, where they tend to bolt everything down in hotels, furniture and stuff, and, you know, other than maybe some chairs and things, a lot of stuff is bolted down, but encourage people to find any place they can wedge themselves, like under a desk that's bolted down, or in my case, I was able to jump out of, I was actually tossed out of bed, and then I was able to wedge in a very narrow hallway between the two walls and keep myself from being slapped around inside the room. But that is a concern with your larger high-rise buildings. Although they're built to earthquake codes and they will sway, the initial shaking is, if you view it sort of in our engineering terms, it's like a forcing function. It begins to set up energy in the building, which will then result in the building reaching a resonant frequency. Now, the shaking may not be the resonant frequency of the building, but it will start the building, it will apply energy to the system, and the building will begin to sway back and forth. And you don't want to be where you might be slapped around inside a room. So I'm just speaking from personal experience there. I ended up kind of jamming myself in a door jam between, you know, in the doorway there just to keep from being slapped around inside the room on that occasion. KA7JLO.
Okay, very good. Well, I'm glad that people are sharing their experiences with us because this is important. And, you know, we are in earthquake country. It doesn't happen very often here, but when it does, we will definitely have a problem. So, let's see. Paul, you had another comment.
KE70, Paul. Doorways in the shaking back and forth is not, California is not a good example of what we will expect. California quakes tend to be fairly short duration, 20, 30, 40, 60 seconds. We're looking at 4 to 5 minutes of shaking of a very large amplitude, whereas the California quakes tend to be quite short amplitude. The movement is back and forth is quite rapid and fairly small. The Cascadia quakes, the Alaska Anchorage quakes, and the one recently in Japan tend to be very large amplitude, lasting very long time. Doorways tend to doors tend to slam back and forth in those situations. So if you're in a doorway, you're going to be banged back and forth by the door for 4 or 5 minutes. So doorways were originally talked about as a good place to be if the building collapsed. Wood frame construction buildings in the Northwest tend to not collapse, so that's not a problem. But the long amplitude shaking for 4 or 5 minutes, things slamming back and forth, falling off the ceiling, are the problems that we tend to experience in the Northwest. Going outside, having chimneys, patio covers, tree limbs, power lines fall on you are the big problems. The absolute number one statistically cause of injuries in earthquakes is broken glass, large cuts. So stay away from windows, stay in interior rooms that don't have windows, and do not go outside. KE70, will you back to Ned?
W7NAT.
Okay, there's Nate. I'll check you in. Yeah, we're talking about the earthquake drill and earthquake preparedness. Go ahead.
Right. I used to live in California in the 70s, and on one occasion there was a earthquake, 7.1, I believe it was, and one of the highways fell down on top of another one in the San Francisco area. I was in San Jose at the time. I was out with my son, who was about 5 years old or so, and we were looking for a computer. Dad was looking for a computer, I should say, and we were in the shop getting ready to buy one, and the earthquake hit. We got outside as quick as we could. I held one arm around a tree, a short tree, and him on the other hand. And when that major shaking was over, we got in the car and went down the road, headed for home. And I could see the phone telephone poles on the left and right side going up and down, back and forth. And, well, that was an experience. We got to the home, and it was still in good shape, but we were worried about it. I was worried for a while. Well, if that was in San Francisco where most of the damage happened, yes.
Late check-in.
Yep, KB7 GDB. This is the emergency preparedness center. That, I think, was called the Loma Prieta quake. Late check-in. I think I recognize your voice. Go ahead.
Kilo 5, Charlie. Papa, Charlie.
KF6, FYD.
Kilo 5, Charlie. Papa, Charlie. So, Nate, knowing what we told you about this now, would you have run outside? That's, what would be the thing we're telling you to do these days after lots of experience in this stuff? What are you supposed to do when the shake happens if you're in a store?
Well, probably not, but I was pretty close to the door, and so we just got out of there quick. Another occasion, a 5.5 or something like that earthquake hit while I was at work, and I got outside as quick as I could again, and I could see in the parking lot, our cars were going up and down, like it was a rodeo, something else.
FYD.
Hey, Richard, yes, go ahead.
Well, I lived in California until about 5 years ago, and I also spent some time in Japan, and I don't know where you got the idea that these earthquakes were short, because the ones in California, or at least some of the ones in California that I went through, were quite long as 5 or 6 minutes, and the ones in Japan were even worse.
Okay, so Richard, what did you learn about, I actually have a little page here about disability. So if you're in a wheelchair, what are you supposed to do in an earthquake?
Stay put. I went through some at work, and the sides of the buildings were concrete, and they were just flapping back and forth. And when you're in a wheelchair, you can't really do much but kind of stay put.
Okay, but the first thing you do is got to lock the wheelchair, right? If you can reach down and lock your wheels. And then if you have anything that you can put over your head or cover your head, you do stay put. But, yeah, you want to lock that because you're going to roll all over the place, right? And I guess if you can't, you know, get out of your wheelchair and crawl, you know, what maybe some people can, you know, that still would be probably preferable. But if you can't get out of the wheelchair, you have to stay where you are. Yeah, so it kind of depends on your mobility. But, That's what they're recommending here. So, at any rate, yeah, no, for Nate, yeah, don't go outside. They really are saying, you know, that the outside of the building is the most dangerous place. And it has to do with falling glass and facades on buildings, things like that. You're much better off staying inside and seeking shelter under, you know, against an interior wall, getting away from the glass windows and riding it out. It's the best place to be. You can go out afterwards when it's shaking stopped, but again, that you might have things falling and power lines and various other things that are hazards. So that is the recommendation for the. So on Thursday, you can pretend that that's happening. Now, are there any other comments about earthquake safety and safety drills? Come now.
W7NAT.
Yeah, go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, well. In both cases I was talking about, there was nothing around outside, and we were fairly close to the door, really close. And so we just headed out, and one tree was about 30 feet away from the building we were in, and at work we were out in the anyway, there was a lot of space around between us and the car lot and so on. So we had a plenty of room to get away from anything that might fall.
Yeah, the worst earthquakes we were ever, I was ever in was in Vietnam. They have earthquakes all the time.
Yeah, Richard. Pick a Richard, any Richard. Go ahead.
Has to be pretty big to do a tsunami.
I'm not saying that, but that's another thing. It always depends on where you are. Now, if you're at the, you know, in a, whenever you go to the coast these days, you should look at the tsunami evacuation routes wherever you are on the coast, because your earthquake warning will be the shaking. And in that case, it's different. You want to be, you want to get up and away from the tidal, the tsunami zone. If there, you map it out and you head as quickly as you can, you know, up the hill to higher ground.
CPC.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously if it's shaking so hard you can't get up, but as soon as you can move, you know, it slows down to the point where you can move. That's what you want to do. So, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, at the coast we have these little monitors that, in the case of a tsunami monitor that will put out a tone, a fierce tone, that lets us know.
DCX.
DCX, plane, go ahead.
Yes, sir, two comments. Number one, I was also in that Sylmar earthquake. I believe it was like 1972, Dan, somewhere around there. And it rolled me out of bed. I was 11 years old, and I rolled under the bed. Freaked my mother out because she couldn't find me. Secondly, with the tsunamis, we have buoys out there that aren't just watching for Russian subs. They're also watching for tidal waves. KK70CS.
K6STX.
Okay, we've got a lot of people with experience of this stuff, so that's good. So that's what one of the reasons they have this shakeout drill is to, you know, remind us once again to think about where we are and that there are different situations where you are. So, STX, go ahead.
Yeah, I've never experienced a tsunami, but preceding the wave coming in, if you would happen to be on the coast and you all of a sudden see the water going way out, like it's an extremely, extremely low tide, and the water's going way out, that's the forerunner of it's coming back in big time. So should you ever witness such a thing as that, your best bet is to scramble to get to high ground as soon as you could.
Surf's up.
DCX.
Yeah, go ahead, DCX.
Yes, sir. Another one from Nate. You're talking about the October 1989 earthquake in San Francisco. It was really bad. I was up in Sitka, Alaska. It's my birthday. I was at an Elks Club watching a baseball game, and we saw it on the video capture from the game. And 220 has never been the same.
Yep, that happened at the Candlestick Park. In fact, I have a very, if you bear with me, I have a very, very interesting thing that happened to a friend of mine who lives here in Salem. he was down there living in San Francisco and attending that game. And during that earthquake, everybody that stopped shaking, they went out to their, the parking lots, got out of the stadium, couldn't find his car. Car was gone. And it turned out that actually somebody had stolen his car during the game. And it was one of the cars that was pancaked in the collapse of the Bay Bridge there. So I don't know if you want to think about it, the righteous nature of that. But, yeah, the car thieves and the car were pancaked. There obviously are structures and things that we don't want to be near a bridge or under a bridge if you're driving, but there's not much you can do about it. Again, you sort of want to stop in a safe location if you can. I suppose if you were on a bridge, don't park under one of those cross beams. But heaven help you if you're on a bridge during the shaking. But modern bridges sometimes just shake all over the place and don't just get destroyed. So anyway, every situation is different. Just be aware that wherever you are, that try to be aware of your surroundings at your home place where you spend the most time at work or home or whatever. Try to look at things that if you find on this drill that, hey, it's, not easy to get to a spot where it's safe, then maybe reevaluate the rooms that you live in. Like, again, if you have a big TV set that's, right next to where you like to sit, or something, or a big, big bookshelf or a gun safe or something like that, those things need to be bolted against the wall so they won't fall over on you. And wouldn't hang out on, masonry chimneys. Not good from California. We drove through, my wife's family went through two earthquakes, that Sylmar one and the Northridge run. And we went driving around the neighborhood in Northridge and saw lots of chimneys that had collapsed onto the into the yards and also into the living rooms of houses. It's another issue. Those tile roofs also shake all over the place and end up on the ground. Anyway, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We're talking a lot about earthquake tonight. I haven't talked about anything else. So, any final comments on the earthquake drill?
KC7LU.
Okay, I got Paul in there. There was somebody else that doubled.
JLO.
Okay, once again, Paul first, then Jeff.
The Department of Oregon Geology and Mineral Industries, DOGAMI, DOGAMI, have a website that interactive maps show areas that are prone to earthquake, landslide, flooding. Along the coast, they have very detailed maps for the tsunami inundation zones. They also have the locations of the assembly areas. That's DOGAMI, DOGAMI, Department of Oregon Geology and Mineral Industries, on their interactive maps webpage, KE7OLU.
Yes, that's a good one to look at, and the name of that map is called HazView, sort of like Hazards View, right? It's Hotel Alpha Zulu Victor Uniform. So where that one, they actually have the website called OregonGeology.org/HazView. So that is a good one, and you can, when you get on the map, you can put your address in or the address of your work or school or various public buildings, and it'll give you seismic reports. It talks about flood hazards, rock slide hazards, things like that. Talks about the kind of soil, whether you're in a liquefiable soil zone, that kind of stuff. So good stuff there to look at, HazView. Jeff, your comment.
Yes, yes. One other thing came to mind. You mentioned, you were talking about earlier, Brett, the World Series, the famous World Series earthquake in San Francisco. At that time, I happened to be participating in an early form of social media called The Well, and it was out of San Francisco, called the Whole Earth Electronic Link. And so I was monitoring chat groups on that at the time and noting a number of posts that were going up almost in real time from people that were down in the Marina District at the time. And one of the things they mentioned was a problem they had with, you know, something, announcement that was being made on TV, don't look for gas leaks with matches or a lighter. And the problem was is they weren't telling people why. And what these comments that I was reading said that a lot of times there's in the Marina District, buildings were collapsing because of liquefaction. And people would go down into basements to rescue other people, but they weren't really looking for a gas leak by trying to light it on fire. That's stupid. But they weren't thinking. And the only source of light they had, because the power was out, would be a lighter. And some people would take the lighter out to look for somebody, not realizing that there was gas in the area. And that some of the comments I read said resulted in fires breaking out in the Marina District at the time. So the point there is to remember that you don't use matches or a lighter to look for gas for people where there might be gas leaks. KA7JLO.
W7NAT.
Yeah, Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, this is why we have one of these little handheld flashlights that's so easy to find now in every room. Well, whatever color it is, yes.
Yep, very good. And don't forget that your smartphone is also helpful for, yep, there. You can get a download an app that is an earthquake warning app, which is good, especially if like you're in California, there's actually an earth sort of early warning system there. But you can have that. And also, you know, your cell phone has a flashlight on it. If it's one of the ones with a camera, it's usually a way to turn that little light on. I use that all the time on my cell phone. I've used it to change my filters in my car. So anyway, I wanted to talk a little more about the fire stuff, because only about 5 minutes left. But there's a few things about the fire that we now that the fires are done and the, you know, roads are open and things like that, that we still need to consider. And that has to do with returning to an area or dealing with contamination from smoke and wildfire debris, okay? So I wanted to mention a little bit about that. And this, of course, is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, and this is the Emergency Preparedness Net. But let's pause here and see if anybody else wants to check in before we talk a little bit more about the fire stuff in the last few minutes of our net tonight. Okay, so first thing is, nearly the whole state was affected by the smoke and ash. And one of the things I was looking at, Oregon State University has a bulletin about taking precautions when wildfire ash falls on fruits and vegetables, okay? So if you're like me and these days it's raining, but if you're like me and you go outside and look, you probably have a lot of ash still on your garden, if you had a garden outside. And if it's a fruit and vegetable garden where you plan on eating the vegetables, they have definitely some recommendations about washing off and avoiding that ash, okay? So, again, I guess the ash event for us is over. So the initial thing was, don't spend a lot of time outdoors. but any food that was left out during the smoke has the potential for contamination. And the closer you were to a house fire versus a, you know, an actual wildfire, the more likely that you might have contamination from other dangerous substances besides just the wood ash. You might have a lot of chemicals burn. You know, you think about your asphalt roof tiles burning and, you know, various things, plastics and things like that. Now, if your house, you know, wasn't burned or, you know, somebody who lives in the burn area and they want to go back to live in it, there's a whole nother set of guidelines about what to do about those, you know, cleaning up the houses that are nearby and even the burn houses. And that's a even more specialized topic. But for us, just doing the garden, let's start with that one. So, you know, rinsing the leaves off and rinsing which helping with our rain now, stripping out the outer leaves of any, you know, and peeling produce that can be peeled, tomatoes, apples, root crops, stripping outer leaves of lettuce and greens. So if you want, you can soak them in a 10% white vinegar solution. That'd be 1 cup vinegar to 9 cups of water. That helps get the ash residue off of the plants. Vinegar works well for wiping off other surfaces that are outdoors. It really seems to get through. There's sort of a stickiness from what's been exposed to. It doesn't come off with a standard household cleaning stuff. So keep that in mind. Things that if you actually had came back and found out that, well, the house didn't burn, but you had some food that was stored. Again, the food storage, foods packed in cans that have been exposed to temperatures over 95 degrees may be damaged. This is always toss things that you can't, with any doubt. Things that fumes that you know can enter cabinets and things and actually contaminate food. So, and they don't want people eating foods that have been around, you know, going through a house fire. And of course, jars can split and crack and allow germs to enter as well. So, anyway, they talk about washing off your plants in the garden, mulching using drip irrigation to keep the contaminated soil from splashing on your plants. Don't use a leaf blower to clean things. You know, instead use a hose to clean off stuff. So those are some basic general things about taking care of your garden, from ash contamination. So that was the first thing I wanted to say. Again, that Oregon State University has an extension program, lots of gardening questions and things on there. So that's where that comes from. So just use Oregon State and a wildfire as a search term. Now, the other thing is actually Linn County had a Linn County Sheriff's Office, which is linsheriff.org. That's Lima, India, November, the word sheriff.org, has a wildfire recovery website. Well, recovery resources, quick reference on returning to homes, what to do after a wildfire, safe ash cleanup after a fire, and there was some more on smoke and ash if there's still smoke and ash in your area. There also is things about your, contamination of wells, some specific instructions on what to do about your utilities, if you had any natural gas, propane tanks, those kinds of things. It's actually a fairly complicated deal, getting your house cleaned up. Hazardous waste, that's another thing. Let me get a drip. So household hazardous waste after can be, if you know somebody, again, who's gone through the fire, they have a federally funded program, free of charge to property owners in Jackson, Marion, Lincoln, Douglas, Klamath, Clackamas, Lynn, Lane, and Wasco counties. They will hazardous waste includes fuel, petroleum, car batteries, propane tanks, antifreeze, et cetera, et cetera. Crews will remove these, also dispose of large pieces of asbestos, paint, chemicals. There's, handout on this on the Linn County website. And you can go to wildfire. You have to fill something out called a right of entry form. Actually, it's coming by October 16th, so allowing cleanup crews. So I guess they're doing that. So I don't have a lot of days to get that out. They can do ash and debris removal. Anyway, there are definitely resources to help you remove your ash and debris from burnt buildings, and it's not something to do with yourself kind of thing. So, any questions or comments on that? We're running out of time here a little bit. Okay, well, they have a website called wildfire.oregon.gov/cleanup, and talking about sign up for cleanup, frequently asked questions. Talks about what if you want to clean up for yourself. I say safe. How do I know when my property's been cleared of hazardous waste? So anyway, it's a website there, and I think there were other additional resources that you can ask those guys. But that's what we have I came up with at first. If somebody else finds something, let us know and put it on the WA7AVU group's IO page. But yeah, there are just be aware. There is a whole process, and there's money to help you clean up, and it's not really kind of a do-yourself thing. You got to get get some help on this stuff.
BUV.
Walt, go ahead.
You had mentioned wells, and I was trying to figure out what the problem would be with a well.
Okay, well, it just says that water supply systems can be damaged and become polluted during wildfires. And again, I guess that would, it doesn't say wells in particular. It says don't drink water from a faucet until emergency officials say it's okay. I know there's some, the water treatment up in, I think it was Lyons that was burned up. So I guess it's going to, again, depend a little bit on your particular property. Let me see if I can find the one about. Here it is, water safety. Water and well disinfection. Here it is. On-site water. Septic system damage may pose a safety risk. Tanks and lids made of plastic may melt. Important to inspect your system. Damaged PVC pipe that may have been impacted by heat. Locate, rope off your septic tank. I guess that's a big one, the septic tank. Let's see. Yeah, actually, they're kind of worried a little bit more about the septic tank. Again, we can sort of think about that, but I guess if the lid was melted, that would not be good. You might fall into the septic tank.
Of which that happened to a firefighter.
Yep. Anyway, these are all these on this LinnSheriff.org has a lot of these resources. Well disinfection for fire damage. It says individual water wells may incur contamination. Once all the repair work is done, wells should be disinfected and water samples taken to a state-approved laboratory for testing. List of approved labs is provided at the end of the document. It talks about, has a link to how to disinfect your well and well casing. And it has a accredited water labs. So there you go. That's all I have for you.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we're kind of out of time here tonight. Was there any final comments? I didn't get to everything. Final comment about COVID. We talk about that a lot, but, we're still going back up. We're on the upswing as far as cases go. That doesn't look great. There are 313 cases. They had 6 deaths. It's not gone away, okay? the deaths themselves are sort of down, The deaths by per month are down for October versus September. I think we had 94 deaths in September. The highest was in August at 138. But the deaths always follow after the cases. So the cases are on an upswing, and we're still kind of a weekly average of a little over 6%. So hasn't gone away, and that means that you still have to be vigilant and avoid those closed spaces and keep wearing your mask. You guys have been doing a good job. Overall, Oregon's doing okay compared with the total number of people, but hasn't gone away. Just keep that in mind. And as colder weather gets out, you're going to be tempted more and more to go indoors. And again, try not to stay indoors without ventilation. That's the key. Maybe figure out other ways to do things. Still eat outdoors. So that being said, I think we're just about out of time. Is there any final comments for the emergency preparedness app? So the time is now 8:08 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. Let's see, Richard said that he would make a recording of tonight's discussion on the WA7ABU.io page. It should appear a little bit later. Our net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. Our thanks go out to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of this repeater. Thank you to all who participated today and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, closing the net now, 8:08 p.m. We now return the repeater to normal undirected amateur operations. KG7, GDB, I'll be clear.